Back at Langley, as the skies grew dark and the night closed in, the communications department picked up a signal that had been sent from Damascus that very same afternoon. The communications agent who received the signal noted the ID number and took it straight to Coyne. "Hope to have news from Fred on Sirocco late tomorrow, 10. Coyne read the message and recognized the ID number immediately as Bob Charles's, and went straight to Jack's office, relieved to finally have a lead and some good news that he could report. "Jack, we may have something. It's not much yet, but..." Jack interrupted before Don could even finish his sentence. Such was his need to know that they had something to go on. "What is it?" "It looks like your gut feeling on this may be right." Once Jack had read the message, he too shared Don's feeling of relief. It contained no detail, and they knew nothing of Charles's activities in the square, and it told them no more than they'd already suspected. But it was just the news they'd been waiting for. It was nothing to go on yet, but it was at least a chance that something would come up, and so far, it was the best news they'd received. Charles was an SIS agent, and was someone that Jack knew very well. Bob was a very similar man to Jack, in that he was as direct as they come. He got the job done, no matter what it took, and Jack knew that he was reliable in this way. Charles had been working in the Middle East for many years, and had been in Syria for 2. His official role was as the press officer for the American Embassy in Damascus, and his cover was secret to such a degree that even the men and women he worked with, within the embassy, were not aware of his real identity. "Good. Now we're moving. If anyone can worm out this Sirocco shit, it's Bob Charles. Thanks, Don. Let Roy know. And let me know as soon as you hear back from Charles. We're gonna have to move fast on this." Jack reread the message, absorbing it fully as if going over the 10 words it contained again would somehow help him. And help him it did, although not in the way he had anticipated. And he jumped up out of his seat and rushed to put on his coat. "Ah, shit, I'm late. Can you do me a favor, Don? Call Louise and tell her I'm on my way. Ah, she'll be mad as hell by now." "Oh, sure, Jack. It's my job to intercept messages, not send them. What am I, your goddamn social secretary?" Don teased with a friendly sarcasm. Jack laughed as he hurried towards the door. "You can be anything you set your mind to, Don, and don't ever forget it." And with that, he left his office. Don could see his coat flailing behind him as he rushed down the corridor, and the door slowly closed behind him. For someone who was always in such command at work, it always amused him that he could be this disorganized at home. Chapter 5. Yusuf made his way through the crowded streets of southern Damascus, leaving the relative safety of the old city district for the quieter streets of the south. Its hordes of market traders and those making their way to the shrine of Sheikh Muhyi al-Din ibn Arabi provided a backdrop into which anyone could slip unnoticed. The southern area of the city was much poorer and had not benefited from the Europeanized development that had taken place further north, towards the Barada. It had developed almost entirely without official approval and had grown out into the Ghouta, becoming a dangerous place for Arabs and a no-go area for anyone of Western descent. Yusuf lived in the southeastern end of the city and was well accustomed to the threats that were inherent just walking the streets. It was a way of life he had grown up with, and it was something he no longer gave any thought to. The streets were filled with children set out to beg by their families, and it was impossible to move anywhere without being accosted and harassed. Cars occasionally rolled through the streets, and, much as in the underbelly of any large city, some were filled with local hoodlums, and the constant threat of violence emanated from these cars at all times. Yusuf had grown used to weaving through these streets he called home and blending into the buildings, avoiding all those who filled the streets, so as he remained unnoticed by them, too. But this time, his ability to blend in deserted him, and he moved along the streets, unaware of the 2 men following behind. As he turned the corner into the street where he lived and walked down the right-hand side, he saw a black car, driver and passenger seats unoccupied, sat 100 yards down from him. He had noticed it, but he'd carried on his path unchanged so as to appear that he was oblivious to his environment. As he approached the car, the two men who'd been chasing his shadow since he left the square 20 minutes earlier quickened their pace until they were only a few feet behind him. Standing out from the other people in the road, who were drifting through the day aimlessly, the two men behind seemed to move with a purpose that frightened Yusuf. He quickened his step, but did not turn around, trying to pretend that he'd not noticed them. But he had, and he knew they had noticed he was aware of their presence. As he approached the car near the end of the street, the back passenger door opened, and Yusuf could see that, in addition to the driver and front passenger, another man was sat in the rear passenger seat. Yusuf sensed all of the men were watching him, and he suddenly felt the urge to run. But by this point, it was too late. From behind, a hand reached out and grabbed his left arm, bending it firmly behind his back, and another hand reached the back of his head and his right shoulder. Unable to release himself from the tight grip that had come without warning, Yusuf's head was pushed down. The two men who'd been following him and watching him unseen in the marketplace only half an hour earlier forced him into the back of the car through the open door and left him to the mercy of the occupants. Then they turned away from the car and walked off in opposite directions and were soon out of sight. His head was forced down between the seats, and his arms were pulled tight behind his back and tied with rope before Yusuf could see what was going on. The man who'd been sat in the rear passenger seat hit him squarely in the temple, not to harm him badly, but to shock him and to stop his vain attempts to release himself. The man in the front passenger seat then got into the back of the car, and the leader instructed the driver to move, and the car lurched into motion, the rear door swinging shut as it pulled away from the street and out of the city. The car hurtled through the city streets until it was out of the confines of its built-up surroundings and out onto the road leading south through the Gauta. The car bumped along the uneven road, picking up speed and putting more and more distance between itself and the city, and Yusuf lay on the floor of the car, held down by the men in the back and with the barrel of a handgun pushed firmly against the back of his head.
"Who are you? What do you want?"
Yusuf asked, his words muffled by the floor of the car against which his face was pressed and almost drowned out by the noise of the engine. His kidnappers didn't answer.
"Why are you doing this to me?"
But again he got no reply from his unknown kidnappers, and he struggled to move his head so that he could turn slightly to see the faces of the men. The car took a sudden turn off the main road, jolting as it rode over rocks and holes, causing Yusuf's head to crash into the floor. With his hands fixed behind his back by rope, he had nothing to protect his face, and he gashed his head on the floor of the car, opening up a large cut on the side of his face and causing his mouth to bleed. The gun, which pushed into the back of his head, held in place by one of the two kidnappers, had caused a large welt to rise up, and it too began to bleed, sending blood trickling down the back of his neck and onto his clothes. Suddenly the car stopped. Yusuf had no idea how long they'd been driving, or where he'd been taken to. But they must have driven for an hour or more. As the kidnappers got out of the stationary vehicle, Yusuf was dragged out of the car, and he fell onto the road. All he could see was a derelict building 20 yards from where they were standing, and a few old houses down the dirt road. The derelict building was little more than 4 walls and a roof. It had just one small hole in the stone for a window, and a larger hole, reaching from the ground almost to the roof, which would once have been the doorway, but now seemed to be little more than the epicenter for the building to disintegrate into. Yusuf tried to stand, but had no strength in his legs from having been forced into the cramped confines of the car, and when he tried to get up, he stumbled feebly back to the ground.
"Pick him up,"
ordered one of the kidnappers, upon which Yusuf was hauled up by his arms and dragged into the building, his feet fumbling around underneath him, struggling to support the weight of his body. As the men led him into the building, the rope gnawing at his wrists, Yusuf looked around again desperately, looking for someone he could cry out to for help. For someone or something, even just the knowledge that he was not alone would be of some comfort. But this solace never came. It was deserted in all directions, and as the sun slowly went down on the horizon, rays flickering across the empty desert, he felt that even it was abandoning him and turning its back. Inside the building it was dark, and it took Yusuf a moment for his eyes to adjust. Dust hung in the air, as if it had not been disturbed for a long time, and it caught in the back of his throat, drying out his mouth and making him gag. The kidnapper who had held the gun kicked him and pushed him to the ground, his face hitting the rock and rubble that comprised the floor. He then pulled him along the ground, Yusuf's body leaving a trail in the dirt, down to the end of the room, where his captors made him get up and stand on a wooden crate next to the wall. Two of the other kidnappers cut the rope binding his hands and pulled him above his head. A third stood in front, holding a gun trained on Yusuf's weak and weary body, as they forced his hands into a row of chains that ran along the wall about 10 feet off the ground. Rusted metal clasps attached around his wrists clawed at the broken skin as the chains were pulled tight and anchored in a hook in the ground somewhere off to his left. Yusuf screamed and shouted, but the kidnappers took no notice, ignoring his every word. As he pleaded with them, the man holding the gun walked up to him, struck him across the face with the barrel of the gun, and kicked the crate out from under his feet. Yusuf's agonized screams filled the room as his arms and shoulders took the weight of his body and the chains tightened in their fastenings. His feet swung beneath him, 6 inches off the floor, as he struggled to find the ground below him. But no matter how much he tried, it would not come to his aid. He pulled on the chains and lifted his body to ease the pain, but he could not hold himself up, and his feet scratched at the wall behind him in a desperate attempt to support his body. The kidnapper walked up to him and hit him in the ribs with his gun, and Yusuf screamed again.
"Open his shirt,"
the kidnapper ordered, as the man on Yusuf's left stepped forward and ripped his shirt down to the waist. Yusuf looked through his blood-soaked eyes and could see one of the kidnappers placing something on the ground in front of him. Through the pain and panic, he could make out what it was, and he wrestled with the chains in a futile attempt to get away. The kidnapper in front of him bent down and picked up what Yusuf knew was an electric shock probe, and then he stepped in towards him.
"Tell me about your friend, the American spy you met today."
Yusuf was weak with the pain and could barely hold his head up.
"I don't know any American spies,"
he moaned. Every time he struggled, and with every breath he took, the chains cut into his wrists more and more.
"Well, maybe this will help you remember."
The kidnapper spat, and he pushed the electric shock probe into Yusuf's stomach. His body jolted and jarred, and his eyes bulged in their sockets as the current seared through his flesh. His neck grew tense as the muscles tightened around his chest and throat, and his legs shot out from underneath him, his hands burning as the current searched for somewhere to go.
"Why did you meet the American spy?"
Barely able to speak, Yusuf strained through the pain as every muscle in his body seized.
"He's not the spy. He's the press officer at the American embassy."
The words tumbling over each other to escape the agonized body as Yusuf shivered and shook. The kidnapper stood silent for a moment, then pushed the probe into Yusuf's reeling body again. His feet gripped the wall behind and pushed his body out as far as it would go until his arms were fully extended. His body hung forward away from the stone behind, and his eyes bulged with the pain. End of Disc 1.